And it's me, it's one of my old pal friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, you got me, and I'm sure if you noticed, a little bit different scenery tonight, just because of I'm using a different setup, and I'm just seeing how this is going to work, you know, and hopefully it will work fine because this is more of a mobile setup, though I still have my same mic, same camera, different computer. So I'm trying to move it off my old desktop onto the laptop, so I'm a little bit more mobile. But anyhow, moving on to the lovely, lovely people that are with me. Let's say hello to Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Hello, everybody. Okay. And anyone who hasn't seen the new battle group postings on the BBS for both Starfleet Battles and Fed Commander, get on that and grab your empire before someone else does.
Yeah, geez, it's been a while. I assume that's in preparation for CL Double Nickel.
Well, I'll let you introduce everyone else because I actually think it'd be an interesting topic to discuss to start off things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Doug, how you doing?
Good evening. I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing good. How's my godson? Godson.
Oh, your godson is doing relatively well. Yeah. He's surviving his younger brother so far. There's that.
Understood. And, hey, Jeff, on the road again, huh?
Yeah, like usual. I saw the Battle Force drop out. You're not wrong about grabbing your empire before someone else does. I think the posts have been out about 36 hours, and every empire I know even remotely anything about has already got something posted.
That does not surprise me at all. Okay, don't mind me, guys. Gary, where's it under?
Okay, so there are two battle groups that have been posted so far.
No.
One is a 500-point squadron scale for Federation Commander, and Steve Petrick posted that, I think, yesterday or the day before. So if you're on the BBS, now bear in mind, usually the most recent battle group listings is stickied by Gene or whoever's like admitting the BBS on the actual front page of each thread, if that makes sense. But that hasn't happened yet this time. So you actually have to look for the post that was actually posted by Steve Petrick the other day that outlines both for SFB and for FedCom what the Captain's Log 55 battle groups would be. Because for anyone who doesn't know, in recent issues of Captain's Log, on the Federation Commander side, you're asked to assemble a battle force worth 500 points squadron scale, but with certain restrictions, like you can't kick X, Y, Z or whatever. And then on the Starfleet Battle side, it tends to be 550. And the restrictions are kind of more finessed a bit because you've got things that you can or can't take in, or that you can take in SFB that don't exist in Fed Commander, that sort of thing. So, yeah, basically, if you're looking on the BBS, you might have to, for the Starfleet Battle side at least, you might have to go back a couple of pages in the thread to see the post that
the outline is on the October 18th archive page.
Okay.
The October 18th archive page is where the posts with 55 rules are.
Okay. Oh. Okay. So they didn't overwrite that. Okay. Because also there's the 54, which is posted as the about message for the...
Yeah, that's the sticky, but if you want the 55 right. Post, it's on the archive, the October 18th archive page.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Got it.
Yeah, I suspect the sticky will probably get fixed over the next few days.
Right.
So I wouldn't panic too much about that.
Oh, understood. Yeah. In theory, if Steve Cole or Steve Petrick wanted me to, I could do it because I have admin access to the BBS if necessary.
Well, so far nobody has posted a battle group for Fed Commander, so
yeah,
the field is entirely open.
Yeah, I noticed
the
that.
The only restriction is that the playtest shifts in the Omega and LMC playtest packs are sadly not available just yet. And also, any of the ships that are designated as Bordas and Badness are not available right now. But that still leaves quite a few Empires, both from Captain's Log and from the various communiques, and also from the various printed, laminated products as well. So, not even just in Alpha, because there was one time I actually submitted a home Galaxy Pirates force that you can't even do a Starfleet battle here because they're not available. Captain's Log ships aren't available in that.
Right.
But in Dead Commander, they are, so I was able to put them in. But, by all means, if anyone on the Fed Comp side at least has an Empire they want to go with, then now's the time. But on the Starfleet Battle side, yes, several of the Alpha Empires have already been scooped up so far, but there's still plenty of LMC and Omega Empires and other Alpha Empires, like the IFC and Zips choose from. So.
Understood. Well, obviously, it doesn't help that they've been doing it for Starfleet Battles for a while. And people, you know, obviously they're waiting for it because, dang, got quite a few posts in a short period of time versus FedCom. I'm looking over at the FedCom. It's like he posted it on the 19th, and it's today, and no one has posted a single one so far. And that's all. It's one day. It's one day. Really? give it a little chance. And well, you got one. Let me just look at the script. One, two. I'm doing a quick count here. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. And is that it? 11. Andromedan Force, you gotta be kidding me. I gotta look at the scenario.
They haven't posted that part yet.
Yeah, 12, 6.
Yeah, they never do. They keep it blind. So usually it ends up, likely it's been basically the factions that the battle groups have been paired off against each other.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes there's a trick. Like, for example, a few issues ago, there was a scenario that involved a gas giant, and there are these orbiting platforms around it. So each task force had to try to extract, I don't remember the exact details, something about extracting information from them or stopping the other guy from doing it and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's always like a twist to it. So it's rarely just like a direct, you know, battle between each other. Like there's some sort of objective that they throw in just to, there was another one year where they, if I say year, but I mean issue, where they actually added in random terrain features. And I found out the hard way because that year, I submitted a force of five Vulcan blockade runners. So technically, they're the only ship right now that's confirmed for the Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a published ship, and it's a regular production ship, so you can take fire with them and throw in tachyon missiles, and you can get the 550. But what I didn't take was any T-bombs. And then I found out the hard way that wasn't a good idea because we got paired against a soldier, but the scenario, this terrain was in the Kickraveler cloud. So had I taken the T-bombs, the effect of the cloud would have actually multiplied the damage effect caused by the T-bombs on the soldier shards. So I guess that's the kind of thing that can catch you out. So it's always good to be take your time. I mean, the people have got till the end of November to refine their submissions. Think about the broadest variety of potentialities that could be thrown at you and what you can try to do with your commander's option points or with your ship selection based on the restrictions that have been posted. And, of course, you know, you'll have to find out the hard way what it actually is they're going to make you do. But nonetheless, I mean, there's definitely some interesting options to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
But there is actually one thing that has come up is that in the Alpha Octants, there's quite a lot of destroyer leaders and war destroyer leaders and stuff. So even if the ships are relatively cheap, you've got at least one type of unit that has a higher command rating so that you can actually fit more ships into your force. in Omega, it's trickier because there are some empires that can do that, but there's others that either don't or they've got weird movement rates. Like, for example, the Warp, because their ships have turrets in them, they're usually a size class, a move cost bigger than standard ones. Like, for example, even their frigate has a move cost of 0.5, and their destroyers have a move cost of 2/3. So you'd only be able to take the frigates, but because they only have, I think, a command rating of 3, then I don't think you can take enough of them, plus commander's opting points, to make the 550. So it's a bit of a challenge that way. Although, on the other hand, the Lesser Magellan and the Cloud Empire should be okay, because they're really built around size class 4 in the first instance. So it should be easier to come up with something for them to be able to work in this set of restrictions.
Yeah, the problem is with LMC, I have no clue when it comes to their year dates. Because this battle group is as of Y-175. I'm not sure when theirs were built. I would think that they'd be before Y-175 for LMCs, because they were trounced by the Andromedans before that date. So, you know.
Yeah, so the scenario in both SFB, well, in SFB, the scenario date is Y-175.
Right.
So that means that if there's a ship that either isn't built yet or that was extinct by the time of Y-175, then you can't have it. And in Federation Commander, the equivalent date is 2575, which doesn't really make that much of a difference, because FedCom is more forgiving in terms of ships that are available in a given era. So
right.
You can do things in the FedCom version of it, but you can't. But on the flip side, because there aren't any commander's option points, the FedCom side, you might find it more likely that fewer people will actually hit the exact 500 points, which is fine, because I think that gets factored into the victory conditions in terms of, like, if you're short a few points, then that stands to you.
Holy
cow.
You
well, I don't want to say for sure, but yeah.
Yeah. None. Okay.
Yeah,
one of the restrictions for this thing is that no ship, this is for FedCom, not for SFB, no ship can have a movement cost greater than 0.5.
Same for the SFB side.
No
ship 2/3 or higher.
Two-thirds.
And no. Yeah, well, not 2/3, which is the next step up from 1/2. So it's worded differently, but it's effectively the same restriction.
Mm-hmm. I forget.
Also, you're not allowed to take any police corvettes or police carriers.
Right.
The SFB side.
No conjecturals, nothing from the module R107, E1 or E2, or basically, I mean, anything that was unpublished. And of course, you can't use X ships because they weren't available. They explicitly say it, no X ships, but it's like at the same time, it's like, okay, but that wasn't even available. Even the partial refits weren't available in 175. I'm pretty sure. I feel pretty confident saying that.
The Sable refits. We'll have to wait until Y-180, so your plasma is only going to go speed 32.
Yeah. Dang. That makes sense why there was like 4 Cobras, a Recon Cobra, and an Eel in the Andro group, because dang, gone it, man. I looked at that and go, what the heck are they trying to do?
Yeah, not to mention the fact
that most
frigate or destroyers only have a command rating of 4. 3 or 4, and then you can add a scout to that with the formation bonus. But aside from that, you're limited to the number of hulls you can bring, and you can't bring anything big.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no size class 2, no size class 3s. It's very small. And what you
see? From what I see, number 16 does allow police ships. It says here, police ships to include police flagships, maximum of 1 can be taken. This includes heavy police ships. This means that the Klingons can
right.
use E4Is or F5Is as E4Bs and F5Ks, etc.
Right.
But you can't take Klingon penal ships, though.
Right.
No, you can, sir. You can take Klingon penal ships, my mistake. But you can only have 1 in the entire force.
Okay. I'm running through some of the...
And also, yeah, if you want to take mercenaries, you have to take the entire force of mercenaries. You can't... like add a spare Orion or Jumokian or Iridani or Velasco ship to your force. You have to have an all Orion force or all Iridani force. That's what I think.
The only problem is there an Orion size class 4 that has a command rating of 4?
Well, I think the Orions have the War Destroyer. Are you able to...
But is it...
Well,
you know, they may have a War Destroyer, but if it's... But if it's got the 2/3 move cost, then that nixes it.
That's the heavy War Destroyer has a move cost of 2/3, because the standard War Destroyer, I'm pretty sure, is a move cost of a half.
Yeah, heavy War Destroyers are explicitly not available.
But the standard War Destroyer should be okay. Because technically speaking, that ship was designed to be more of a mercenary ship rather than a pirate ship. So I guess it would make sense in this context.
Yep.
I took a brief look at the materials I have available digitally, which is, albeit not everything. And I was thinking, of trying to put together some kind of light raider with light raider squadron with some kind of flagship, and then run a drone plasma mix for grins and giggles. But I can't seem to find anything that would let me take 3 LRs without abusing the scout slot. Because the LRs only have 3,
well,
and the free trader only has a command rating of 3. And that's just the stuff that's in basic and advanced.
Yep.
I don't have the Orion reinforcements module where I can lay my hands on it. So it's, I'm looking at less than the full inventory, but it just makes me wonder, okay, so if you've got a command rating of 4, you can have 4 ships in your squad. You can have your flagship and 4 ships. Wait a minute. Let me back this up. If you've got a command rating, your flagship doesn't count against your command rating, and a dedicated scout can join the squadron in addition to the regular command rating. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. There's a free scout, and then your command rating is the additional ships plus the flagship itself.
Okay, so 4 ships plus a scout. Yeah, that's around 500 points for most things in this theater. So maybe it's not quite as bad as I was thinking.
Because I'm trying to remember.
It would be interesting to see if I could find something that would work better for a flagship for the Orions.
Yeah, I would. Because actually, if you have a look around, I'm trying to remember if it's on Warehouse 23. Actually, no, I'm fairly sure it is because I have it. Yeah, it's like Warehouse 23 has the SSD book for Module R2. I think R2 is the one that comes with additional Orion ships. I'm fairly sure that's the one that has the War Destroyer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. That's also R2 has Federation Kzinti, Orion, and Andro as memory serves.
Yeah. I'm fairly sure that. So I'm just going to bring up a new tab here. And so I'm not at the computer right now, but I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Because I think if you go to the Warehouse 23, you can actually look at the preview PDF for every ADB product that they have listed.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually see there what the ship list is for each module before you buy it. So you don't have to worry about spending money for something.
That's true on a number of titles, but it's not universal on the SSD books. I've seen a couple of the SSD books where the preview page is the front cover and one ship.
Which makes sense.
Let me see now. Well, the other thing as well is that there's actually a bunch of free PDFs that are on the ADB website, and there's actually one where, I'm trying to remember who it was who created them, but somebody basically created PDFs for every Empire in Alpha, Omega, LMC, Triangulum, and so forth. And basically, the PDF, it tells you every module that every ship is in, open to the point that that particular PDF was created. So you can even go to the one that says Orion Pirates, and it basically go basic set and mass missions, module R2, module R6, 7, 8, 9, and so forth. And you'll be able to see that way which is the one you may not need for that ship. Sorry, I'm just like, while we're doing this, I'm just looking at the R2 SSD book. Oh, and also, for anyone who's kind of like likes the way the Federation Commander has the laminated color cards, you can actually get many of the SSD books on Warehouse 23 have a color version. So if you have a color printer and you want to get like a laminate sheet to put on the printout, then you can use a dry erase marker and use that SSD multiple times. And you'll also have some. Now, the colors are slightly faded out compared to On-Site Commander, but it still, you know, puts a bit of life to it if that's what you want. Now, if you don't, there's plenty of purists who don't want that, which is perfectly fine. You don't have to. But, just looking here. If you look for Starfleet Battles Module R2 SSD Book 2012 Black and White, there is a preview PDF linked on there. So that should clarify whether or not the War Destroyer is in that one or not. But, I forget now. But there's also the Orion Double. I'm pretty sure there's a double light raider in one of these as well, which is basically two light raiders stuck beside each other.
Right.
I remember that from R2 back years ago when I had a more complete set than I've got available to me right now. That's one of my problems is that I had a pretty decent set in the late 90s, and I don't have access to that anymore.
But, so I wouldn't, because, I mean, there's usually a fair number of Orion submissions for these kind of things, and I'm pretty sure that there's been one before that was size class for Ronnie as well. So I wouldn't worry too much. I'm pretty sure that if the Orions are you want to go for, the only thing I would say is that you might have to be careful in terms of which cartel you're setting as your home territory, because usually the submissions, if you're a pirate faction that has to worry about technology availability, which applies for the Orions as well as for the Jumoki and Delta Neon Sea, the rules in the submission oblige you to say, this is my primary territory, and so you'll be obliged to take that many percentage points of your weapons from that empire. So if you want to get
Right, as I recall looking over the rules for battle forces, that Orion pirate forces can have at most one non-cartel vessel in the battle group, which would account for that.
Well, actually, the handy thing about if you go for the cluster cartel, you get access to Xinti, Ylirin, and Klingon technologies as your home territory, because they operate at all three at once. But most of the others just get one empire at a time. So you might have, although ironically enough, since the Peladon are allowed, you could ask them if they let you use the Peladon as your home territory because they use plasmas and drones.
Well, I just thought it would be very interesting to have a squadron of Black Raiders with C-Racks or B-Racks popping drones out. Mm-hmm. And when somebody's fighters get too close, then the guy who hasn't been shooting lit starts popping plasma Ds every other impulse. It just seems like very interesting mix.
Mm-hmm. Although, speaking of interesting mixes, there are rules in Module C6 about in the map sheet P timelines, Orions can use Paravian territory as a home territory, or if they're operating in Gorn or ISG space, they can use Paravian territory as a secondary one. So you could even take a mix of quantum wave torpedoes and plasmas and go that route. Because since nobody's going to be using anything heavier than the plasma G, then the quantum wave torpedo might be proportionally more dangerous than if you got cruisers with plasma S or R-torps.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
That'd be worth a look at.
Because I always reckon the Quantum Wave Torpedo is a really good pirate weapon. And also, there's a playtest pirate faction called Omega called the Zosman Marauders. And in the long run, I'm hoping that because there are parades in Omega as well, that there'll be an official allowance for the Zosmans to take Quantum Wave Torpedoes as well. So in both Galactic Auctions, you'd have the opportunity to see how well a pirate weapon the Quantum Wave Torpedo can be.
Does a quantum wave torpedo launcher require a centerline mount?
It does not. You can put it in a wing mount. But the only thing is that I'm not too sure, because I posted about a question about this on the BBS, but I'm fairly sure that you have to specify, like, you know how in a wing mount ordinarily, if you take a direct fire weapon, you have to specify whether it's 120 degrees to the side, like LS plus L or RS plus R, or if it's facing FA. So I'm fairly sure that if you're taking a quantum wave torpedo, the onus is to do the same thing, where you basically have to say, is the intention for the quantum wave torpedo to be facing forward, or is it facing to either side? But I haven't heard back from G-Petrick in terms of confirming that. So, because it might be the case that you have to have an FA because of the nature of the weapon. But for now, at least, we'll have to wait and see. But there's no, you can always put it in and then see what it said. So.
Interesting thought. It will be an interesting thought experiment,
so,
that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess, again, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up is because I wanted to ask the panel or whoever's out here to see, based on the current guide, what kind of force they would go for, even if it's for an empire that's already been called dibs on. If the option was open for whatever, how would they like to go about things, and what kind of ships and additional options and stuff they'd like to pick up.
Well, the most fleet experience I personally have putting together is Andromedan Federation, Kazinti, and a little bit of Orion. And I believe, other than the Orions, the various posts on the board have already covered most of that ground. As far as the Federation goes, you can't really go much wrong with the Lollipop Squadron. Because by 175, they'll have all the refits they're ever going to get, at which point they'll be fairly formidable. I believe somebody posted one with two DDs, a DDL, a DDG, and a Scout Plus, along with miscellaneous commander's points.
Although, in fairness,
that's probably going to be more than just about anybody else can file.
Aren't that many actual old style destroyers left, because they would have either been converted into NCLs or replaced with the newer war destroyers. But of course, that's not stopping people from taking them in this battle group. So it's entirely up to people there. But I think it's interesting how you can have such a very different character in ships for the same empire, depending on whether you're going for the peacetime construction ships like the old destroyer, or if you're going for the war construction ships, like the war destroyer. Because they can act very differently. But not always in the sense that the one is better than the other. You get the pluses and minuses, for certain empires at least. So what do you think, Paul? Do you have any thoughts about what you'd go for?
Centaurian. Now,
well, you've got time, because the only thing is that because I just noticed that one of the exceptions for the Centaurians is that apparently they are being allowed to take ships which historically didn't exist until after they arrived in Alpha. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to put together the destroyer and frigate squadron with a few surprises, like you could go for that if you wanted to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was reading exactly what you were talking about, which is for the above purposes, all Saltorian ship classes that otherwise would meet the restrictions that arrived with the Hive ship burning Torch of Vengeance or entered service after the burning of Torch of Vengeance arrived are, as I say again, available. So, cool.
So what that also means is that, does that mean that you're allowed to take T-bombs and stuff? Because historically, the old galaxy, Solians and Saltorians, didn't know what those were. So, but they did start adopting them after they got to this galaxy. So does that mean that if you do submit a Saltorian battle group, that they'll be okay with you taking the T-bombs as well?
I would guess that that would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gotta love this. For the purpose of the scenario, no ship in the Tholian Force can include a webcaster. Include a webcaster or casters. That's weird. Or web snares are not available by, including a webcaster must, by definition, be formed from the Tholian home galaxy ships and cannot use variants of ships that appear only in the Milky Way galaxy. Such a force with webcasters would have represented a task force in the pre-revolt Tholian home galaxy. In this respect, there may be two Tholian forces submitted, one for the home galaxy, one for the Holdfast. Note that it pretty much limits a home galaxy force to patrol corvettes and Neo-Tholian frigates. Wow.
And I'm pretty sure that even the frigate doesn't have a command rating of 4. Oh, and also because there's no scouts in the home galaxy, so I don't think you can reach 550 with those restrictions. Because you'd need the home galaxy destroyer, which has a webcaster, so you can't take it. But I'm trying to remember because there's the module R4T that came out recently, and it added a whole bunch of additional SSDs for the Tholians. I'm trying to remember if that product came with a variant of the Neo-Tholian destroyer that replaced the webcaster with something else. I think maybe I'm mistaken, because I'm fairly sure that there's been at least some sort of design that was basically done up to show the lack of access to webcasters and what the Tholians had to do in the rest of the thing. But maybe I'm mistaken. But yeah, I think that would actually make for an interesting ship. You take a Neo-Tholian, maybe replace it with a Phaser 1 or something, and at the very least that might make it easier to assemble this kind of task force for the battle force. If it's not meant to be, then
fair enough. True. Okay. Right. Bump. Don't mind me. I'm there. There it is. Okay. You get as many carriers as you want within the BPV size and command limits. That's one thing. I'm looking to see where the command limits are specified. Dun, dun, dun. What rule is that? Is that an S8? Or anybody know? I know they're specified like in scenario rules. I just forget where. No ship modifications. Darn.
Do you have module R4T on your computer?
Excuse me?
Because I'm pretty sure that there's, in either in the R section or in the SFB book, there's a couple of different variants. There's something about Neo-Tholian Destroyer Milky Way version, which of course would be not eligible for the Home Galaxy Force anyway. But I think it's something like had these ships survived into the modern era, then they would have had disruptors installed, but since they wouldn't have been able to use the webcaster, something was done. But maybe I'm mistaken, I don't know.
Right.
Because for anyone who wasn't familiar with it, in module Y1, when the early years was introduced to Starfleet Battles, it was specified that when the Tholian sphere arrived from the home galaxy, it had two Neo-Tholian destroyers and four Neo-Tholian frigates. And these ships had their particle cannons were functioning, and the destroyers' webcasters were functioning. And the Holdfast was able to repair them, but once the ships were lost, they weren't able to replace them. So by the end of the early years, all six ships were gone. So they didn't get more until later in the timeline. So, and also there's like a whole thing where they talked about how there was like an encrypted data file that was on the sphere with information about the webcaster, but because the Holdfast refugees were police forces rather than military, they didn't have the key needed to access it. And when they tried to access the information about the particle cannon, the system went into lockdown and basically melted down. So they pretty much lost the access to the particle cannon files. So they didn't want to have that happen to the webcaster files. So they waited, and then when the 312th, the Neo-Tholian squadron showed up, the ranking admiral on board had his own command codes, and he was able to enter them in. And from that point onward, the two Tholian groups were able to work together and develop a limited production run of webcasters.
Mm-hmm. And didn't I remember something from the Tholian history when it comes to when the 312th arrived, that they had to basically scrap a lot of the smaller Neo-Tholian ships, like the Neo-Tholian frigates.
Well, they still retcon that, because in Module R4T, they actually say that a couple of the hulls had been, the innards had been salvaged, but the actual outer like shell was still there. So at some point after the General War, or maybe during the Andromedan War, they were able to basically install new components inside them and bring them back into service. Hmm. So there are a handful of Neo-Tholian destroyers and frigates that are in the Holdfast fleet during the Andromedan War.
Right. But the original components that were in them were scrapped to repair the larger ships. If I recall correctly, that's what happened. That's the story with the 312.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and actually, there's even a third group of Tholians that was introduced in Captain Fogg a while back, where it turns out that there was in the Draco Dwarf galaxy, it's a satellite galaxy of the Milky Way, there is a planet that is kind of like the ancestral Tholian homeworld, except that it's 100 degrees too hot. So this group of Tholians managed to make their way there, but they had to basically use web to create a sun shield around to block the planet, to lower the temperature down to the level that the Tholians can live on. And so they also had one of the ships that was there was an old Neo-Tholian battleship called the Waterbuck, but it was too damaged to use in combat, so they ended up basically lowering it to the surface of this new colony and using it as a colonial platform.
Huh.
So it's actually interesting to think to see if we'll see any more about Draco, because it also says that in the, I think Y206 or Y207, the Holdfast Tholians actually send an expedition to link up with them. So that will definitely be an interesting thing to in terms of like how that's going to affect the Tholians in the new X2 era. So, so there's which actually brings me to another thing I wanted to get to later, is that I noticed that there's a lot of people that their knowledge, their time up until now with SFB or with Second Empire or whatever would have been during the 80s and 90s, or maybe up to around the year 2000 or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And many of them are coming back in the more recent times,
right,
to get back involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering, if not tonight, if tonight's too busy with other topics, fair enough.
Yeah, it's getting a little late.
I think that at some point it would be interesting to have a have a topic where we kind of basically offer a refresher in terms of what ADB has been up to since then and what there is to consider or skip, if that's what you want, in terms of what's going on in 2022.
Gary, I think that's an excellent idea as a topic. Agreed. Because there's definitely since the 1990s, I'll say 1990s, that's when things peaked, because of that was after the interim, when basically ADB came back, you know, alive, had the big tournaments at Origins and so forth. So they were really active at that point, and producing, you know, good products, not some crap products that Task Force Games want them to shove out so that Task Force Games could stay afloat. But after that, there's a lot of things that did happen after that. And for those who went away and are now coming back, and I agreed, I think that'd be a good idea to offer, okay, you know, this is all that's happened. These are some of the modules that have come out. Obviously, part of that is going to be, and I noticed this real quickly when I was grabbing information for tonight, for the news portion of the podcast, and that is that somebody had just come back who used to play SMB previously. Well, they picked up FedCom, and which is obviously one of those things that got introduced while they were possibly away, you know, that now there's Federation Commander, which is a little bit lighter when it comes to play versus SFB, but at the same time, that it's not SFB light. There are certain rules and certain things that have been modified from what would be considered SFB that change the way the mechanics work. So you have to be aware of those things. Obviously, things like cancel movement and things like that, you know, that are in FedCom that are not in SFB. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if you try to start castling in FBC, you'll get killed.
Yeah, start castling doesn't work in FedCom.
Although, actually, before we get into that, I just kind of forgot that. Is Doug still there? Because I'm just curious as to if he's checked out any of the battle group stuff and if he has any thoughts about who he'd go for. Sorry to speak to you, by the way, he's got you in the third person. Okay.
No, I've been quiet for a reason. So, there's that. No. I don't have anything to put in on that. No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, for my own part, actually, I never really talked about that. One day, I'd like to be able to submit a force for the Zosman Marauders, because they're the pirates that were introduced in CL50. But they're not even just pirates, because they do have a home empire elsewhere in the galaxy. And they have ships that are designated for that.
Right.
So I actually got bored enough, and I did draw up, could you actually do 550 points based on the technology that they have available? And I was able to put it together, but I haven't asked anyone whether or not I can get an exception, because they're in Captain's Log, they don't count as, like, formally published. So I'd have to get permission from ADB to formally submit them.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's... Yeah, so I guess that's another thing to put a pin in terms of the kind of stuff that's been going on since the year 2000 that people might be, wouldn't have been around back in the time. So.
No, understood. Yeah, the one thing that I always found was just obviously different when it comes to the Zosmans versus the Orions is that unlike the Orions, where, at least to my understanding, pretty much the Orion's cartels, they are separate from the government of Orion itself. And, you know, Orion itself doesn't benefit from it's not supported by the pirates, at least that's my understanding. versus the Zosmans, the reason why they even took up pirating at all was to support the home world. You know, in both resources and money to for the home world. And that's, and that, you know, so that's, to me, it's a little different situation in the Omega Octant with the Zosmans versus the Orions in the Alpha.
Well, of course, the Orion Cluster Cartel is definitely neck deep with the Wynn government in terms of helping keeping it going and getting it free ships and stuff. So I guess it's a cartel by cartel basis, because in theory there is the Dragon Cartel that is, you know, based in and around Orion space.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if you ask a politician from the Orion government who's like sitting on the Federation Council, he'll say, "That's a complete scandal. Like, how dare you accuse us of being tied to those nasty pirates?" But it's not a coincidence that the Federation police forces aren't allowed to operate in the Orion enclave. So, you know, there's probably, even if the government is, you know, far enough away from the pirates to not be directly implicated, I'm sure there's plenty of like mega corporations that are on the Orion homeworld that, you know, have at least some sort of tangential connection to what's going on. So,
Don't forget, you've also got two different SSDs in the system. You've got the Orion Free Trader, and you have the Orion Free Traitor, which are very similar hulls, but they have very different business models.
Mm-hmm. And actually, in the early years modules, there's actually even ships to represent the Orion National Guard. So they're the ones that, and of course, some of those ships were actually the very first pirate ships, because when the Orion had their big mutiny in Y-113, the classic pirate ships didn't exist. So it was actually some of their National Guard ships that packed up and fled to Romulus base. And then it was like a few years after that where they built up the infrastructure to be able to develop the classic pirate ships that we know in the modern era. So, yeah, definitely. And also, for anyone who hasn't read it yet, there's a historical write-up for the Orion homeworld in the Federation Sourcebook for Prime Directive. And it actually goes into more detail in terms of the different ethnic and cultural groups that were on Orion and how they have basically reflected what the Orions are like in the modern era. So, for example, on the Orion home planet, there's a supercontinent in the northern hemisphere, but in the southern hemisphere, there's all these scattered islands. So the Orion tribes or whatever that were in the Southern Ocean, they're referred to as the Sea Corsairs. And so they were never entirely pleased with the idea of signing up to a planetary government. So it's possible that some of the descendants of the Sea Corsairs went into space and decided that they wanted to strike out on their own, and then the pirate cartels was a way for them to do that. So,
mm-hmm. Actually,
that does bring up the interesting question, but if there are such things as letters of marque in the SFU in the traditional wet Navy sense in our history.
Huh. Wow.
I'm pretty sure yes, because like anytime there's a war on, the various belligerent empires will try their best to sign local Orions to their cause. So they'll either,
which is probably why the Federation permits them to exist, provided they don't get too onerous with their take.
Well, see, part of the issue as well is that when the Orions joined the Federation, it was in the middle of the First Romulan War. And the Feds weren't doing all that well in that war, so the Orions pretty much had all the cards, held all the cards. So the treaty that brought the Orions in included all of these exceptions, such as, for example, not allowing the police to operate in Orion space. So it's kind of like the best deal that they could get, but because of the way the Federation is set up, like, there'd be if they tried to use actual military force against the Orions, then, you know, dozens of planets would secede. So they're pretty much stuck with it. But it does explain why, during the General War, the Orion Enclave was able to declare neutrality, because that was actually a clause that was stuck into the original accession treaty back in the 100 years before. So, on the flip side, though, the neutrality of Orion helped the Federation in certain ways because it allowed them to negotiate, arrange things like prisoner swaps and, intelligence reports, like you could say, and, both sides were using Orion as like a hotbed of, spying and counter-spying and stuff. So,
and third party shipping for breaking sieges and such.
Mm-hmm. And when the tide turned in the late Y-170s, the Feds, all they had to do was fight for the territory around the enclave. And once the Coalition were driven from that distance, the Orions automatically rejoined the Federation. So basically, that was like one-third of the distance to the Tholian border that they got for free, basically. They got back for free, more or less.
Yeah, but that's definitely something I've...
Fascinating history.
Yeah, as I said, that's one thing I really didn't know about, that, which is much about the history of Orion and how it came into be part of the Federation and the pirates and all that, and how they came into being and so forth. It's one of those historical things that I didn't know. But
mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the stuff is available as PDFs on the website as well. Like the more in-depth stuff is in the Federation source book, the Prime Directive, which mm-hmm. is a really great product. It was written by John Sickles, and it's probably the highlight of any of the stuff that he's done for ADB. He also wrote the Romulan source book for Prime Directive, which itself is quite interesting, because it's not tied to the idea of on-screen canon, it's able to basically give an authoritative view on the exodus from Vulcan and the early days on Romulus and how they were able to basically, adapt to the new environment and eventually build back up to the point where they could expand the empire and stuff and go into, like, the various great houses and... Because it's lots of really good role-playing material because, like, if you're doing a tabletop or a pen and paper RPGs thing, it's perfectly possible to do a campaign on Romulus or elsewhere in the empire where you basically... You Game of Thrones it, but instead of the House Targaryen and House Lannister or whatever, you've got House Aurelius and House Nerthubula and stuff, whatever. And they're all, in theory, they're all pulling together to support the Empire, but in reality, they're at each other's throats to try to get the best contracts with the government or to try to colonize the best planets or to get their crews, the higher ranking officers aboard starships. And so on and so forth. So definitely there's some...
Very, very Roman.
Lots of stuff there.
So which Prime Directive book would you recommend?
Well, if you're looking at it from a background perspective,
yes,
then the Federation book is probably the best one. And then the Romulan and Klingon War books are good also.
So
the Romulan one is probably...
So GURPS Federation would be good?
In fairness, the Federation one's really good. Now, in fairness, the Klingon one was done first, and then by Steve Cole, and then the Romulan one was done by John Sickles, and then the Federation one was done after that. So the Federation one was able to learn from the experience of both the Klingon and Romulan ones.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the Romulan one had a bit more leeway to focus only on the Romulans because the Romulans don't really have much in the way of subject planets. Because like for the Klingon books, they had to basically include a write-up not just for the Klingons themselves, but for all of the subject planets that are in the Empire that provide crews for their ships. So with the Romulan one, I guess there was more of a way to kind of like do more of a deep dive on the Romulans as a species and as an empire as well, in comparison to the Klingon book, which had so much more of a range of species to account for. But I think the Federation actually is the best of both worlds because it gives you a lot of really useful info in terms of like how the Federation is structured and what the various federal institutions are like. But also it's got some really interesting info about the various planets and their history. Like the history of Andoria is actually quite interesting as well because it kind of tries to explain why the Andorians developed the way they are, and you know, where their culture comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's lots of really interesting stuff there. But yeah, and also, although of course I should note that the core book is itself full of info, background wise, that's worth checking out. But because it has to include so much room for the actual mechanics of playing the game, then you might find that it's each particular subject that's covered in the core book is by of necessity less in depth than with the Empire source books.
Okay.
But I should note that the Prime Directive books come in a variety of different products, like D20 Modern and stuff.
Right.
But I would recommend the GURPS one if you're focused on the background, because they're the default, and also, like, for example, the core book for the GURPS Prime Directive, it was actually updated by Gene Sexton a couple of years ago, and it includes species that were actually taken out of the D20 Modern book. Like, for example, I don't believe the Sartorians are in the D20 one. I don't, correct me if I'm wrong. But also the five species of the Interstellar Concordium. There's information about them that's in the GURPS version of the book. And actually, there's an expanded amount of data that was added to the recent revision to the core rule book for GURPS Prime Directive about how the IFC functions and how the five species work themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That is not in the other game systems, because I think the idea was to offer those that kind of stuff separately, but then it just hasn't happened yet. So long story short, stick with the GURPS ones.
Okay, cool. Come on, people. I'm trying to put them in my cart as we speak. There's Klingons. Okay. So, problem is, after I do this, I have to then log in. I have to go check to see which ones I've already purchased. Because in theory, I could repurchase things that I've already bought. And that'd be a waste of money.
Yeah, we almost need ADB to come out and put together a punchable dance card for us folks so that we know how many products we have yet to buy.
Yeah. Oh, who was it? It was O'Reilly. O'Reilly. One time where I bought multiple copies of their ebooks, and I went back to them. I was like, can I get a refund? Because I bought the same book twice. And it's like, I only need it once. So can I get a refund for the second time I bought it? It's like, sure. And they were glad to give me a refund. Because I know there's some places that where you sell electronic books where they will say, hey, wait a minute, you already bought this one. Are you sure you want to buy another copy? You know,
mm-hmm.
they're nice that way.
if you do already have the Federation or source book or even the core book on Warehouse 23, the revised versions get uploaded to the same. Like if you go to your list of my books, you'll actually see the revised version will be there. Like they don't list them as separate products that you have to buy separately. If you've bought an old version, then you'll get the revised version for free, because basically you've already paid for it, if that makes sense.
Right. Excuse me. Okay, I'm just looking at my downloads at the moment. Because I bought quite a bit from Where's 23. I know I bought every single Stormata book from Where's 23. Okay, Admiral Edition. Okay, Federation Commander. Captain's Log. I already bought GURPS Federation, GURPS Klingon. Did I buy GURPS Romulan? I don't see GURPS Romulan at the moment. I bought Caudal Arms, Merchant of the Federation. Some of the older games, Asteroid Z-04, Cerberus. And one of the coloring books. So I already have GURPS Federation, GURPS Klingon, and the GURPS Prime Directive. Actually, that one's not sold anymore. I got the old version. Because I'm looking
What they did is, that's the new prime directive for the book. It's an exception to what I said a few minutes ago. So, for example, if you download that copy of Corpus Federation that you see on your list there, that should be the revised version. If I'm pretty sure. But if with Prime Directive, the core book, the problem with that, there was so much stuff that needed to be added and fixed up from the original, that the book is like, I think it's like 50 to 100 pages bigger. So in that case, ABB, what they had to do was basically create three new SKUs for it. So there's one SKU for the first half of the new book, and there's a separate SKU for the second half of the book, and then there's a third SKU for the combined PDF.
Oh, okay.
Something like 350 pages. Like it's quite big.
Yeah, yeah. It's $40 too.
Yeah. So I forget which of the two sub books has the background information that might be useful. But I don't know. I guess there's like nuggets of info that's in both of them. So I guess you should just go and buy the combined book.
Hmm. Yep.
But
Actually, that was one thing I was doing I've been doing for the past. It took me, how long? It took me almost like 3 or 4 hours where I sat down. I've got this collection of ebooks, and I went and organized them into folders so that I could. This is BattleTech. This is the Dart programming language. This is that, you know, so that make it a little easier to find things. So, yeah, that was part of me getting my desktop ready to basically just end up being a server that I can do everything on my laptop and then that's acts as a server. But anyhow, yeah, so cool. I'm back. Okay, now I'm where I'm supposed to be. Excellent. Okay, well, I think with that, we will wrap up for this evening. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure talking to you. Gary, always nice having you around, and thank you for bringing up a wonderful topic about talking about the battle groups.
Thank you, and I don't know when it will be, but I hope we get a chance to do that 2,000-plus refresher. Episode at some point.
Yes. I would love to. Actually, just a quick mention that Iggy mentioned that he took a 25-year break from SFB, then he's back. And he, where is it? I could have sworn he mentioned it. Oh, yeah, and Chris Newsy said that happened to him when it comes to taking the break and then coming back. They came back to first the FedCom, then StarMata SFU, and then finally to SFB. So, obviously, there's others out there, and I think it'd be a great episode to have.
Yeah, like me.
Yep. And obviously, it's going to be available for download from YouTube, and hopefully, I can get some maybe get some good SEO? Search engine optimization. Yeah, SEO. Okay. Well, in the meantime, Gary, you have a good night.
Have a nice one.
Okay. Doug, you were quite quiet, but that's fine. You still got two kids and a wife to pay attention to while you're there.
This was the quiet time moment, so yay. Yeah. We're down through our last 3 or 4 days here on the fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So just thought I'd throw that out there. It's still active. 24th is my absolute cutoff when I have to either set up the deposit thing or just refund everything, carte blanche, one way or the other. So there's that, Gamers of Winter.
Yay!
Yep. A few months away. It sneaks up on you.
Agreed.
That's pretty much all I had.
Okay. Well, you take care and take good care of my godson.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye. Jeff, always a pleasure to have you around, and stay safe out there. So you have a good night. Okay. I don't know. if you heard me or not. But anyway, we'll wrap it up with that. Actually, nice little discussion there about the different battle groups. Some more importantly, some of the restrictions and so forth. And obviously, get your name in there. You know, looks like it's going to be an interesting one. No size class 2 or 3, very small. And they still have to get under the command limits, which I have to look up because I'm not familiar with the command limits. Though, obviously, I could submit mine for the FedCom because there are no command limits to my understanding. I'd have to double check, but I'm pretty sure there's no command limits there. So it makes things a little bit easier, doesn't it? And of course, there's a hint for those people out there who love know about the history of SFB, which I'm one of those people who does. I've not actually had a chance to, I did not realize that I had those two different GURPS, obviously. They're probably sitting on my hard drive somewhere as part of my collection of ebooks. But I'm gonna get the Romulan one. You know, I might not play GURPS, you know, Prime Directive, because I'm not that much of a role playing person. But at the same time, I love to find out the history of SFB, some of the more in depth background material. I think that's great to find out. And I definitely want to read that. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.